Okay, it's been a long time since a bonus episode has dropped, and here you go with the NBA Finals fast approaching, Oklahoma City awaiting the winner of the New York Knicks and Indiana Pacers series. I don't claim to be a current Knicks fan, but some people know that back in the mid-90s, early 90s, I was and still am a big Patrick Ewing guy. I lived and died with the Knicks as a middle schooler. Did not continue my fandom into the 2000s for various reasons, but very pleased to see them back. Down 3-1, but the series is not over. Would love to see the Knicks come back and make an NBA Finals appearance. With that being said, it's been a busy few weeks, and episode number 100, as you know, did not drop on this past Sunday. A lot of things happening, events, obligations, and various goings-on that have taken my time and attention away from Dan Time, the podcast. So it's amazing that I've stayed on track this long. But it's a good thing. It was good to take some time away and just let it go. Just focus on the things that matter. Not that the podcast does not matter. But for those of you who were thrown into disarray Monday morning, you woke up, there was no episode to carry you to the office or whatever commute you have in the morning or to the gym or wherever. From the bottom of my heart, I apologize. Can only imagine what you were forced to do, what audible you called to get through the early part of this week. But here you are, a bonus episode. I pulled a couple gems. I wanted some basketball talk. It hasn't been a lot of it on this show, but a little bit. And I'm going way back, halfway back to episode number 50, to a conversation with my good friend, Denny Lyons, who just so happens to be celebrating his birthday today. You're going to love this Michael Jordan story and a couple other little tidbits. And right after that, taking it way back to episode number 4 with Danny Zimmern, the first Danny on the show and a big-time guest at the time and still very proud of this episode. It was with the old mic, so some audio limitations, but I can easily overlook that because of the quality of the content. Get ready for this Sunday. You're going to love the guest coming up. Thanks so much for listening. Follow the show at DanTimePod on social media. Every episode available on YouTube and anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you have a question, request, or complaint, want to rag me a little bit, DanTimePod@gmail.com. Thanks so much, and let's get to the bonus content here. This is Denny Lyons, followed by Danny Z.
To give you a little backstory, I've been watching Carolina basketball since I was a little kid. And before I grew up mostly in Wilmington, North Carolina from 11 to 17. But prior to there, my parents had lived there. They worked for a company called Corning down there. And they lived up near a school called Laney High School. And when they lived there, my older sister, Kate, was probably in diapers. And my dad played in a church basketball league, but he was terrible. But he would practice in his driveway all the time. They had a big old driveway. And they had these kids who lived kitty corner them with a bunch of sons. And one of them would come over and practice all the time or play with his brothers. And so one day, one of these kids was in high school and he was getting bigger and stronger. And these are the old school backboards that didn't have spring loaded rims or anything. So he learns to dunk and he breaks the backboard. So he yanks on it and it has no spring. So he just pulls it and just splinters it up. So my dad, he's a pretty good, great guy. He at the time said, you know what? No big deal. Just go home. Make me a new backboard with your dad. You can make it out of plywood. I don't care. And we'll hang it back up here. So that kid went home, took a piece of plywood, basically got the correct size square, put it back on there, brought it back to him. They hung it back up, and that kid still played with his brothers and practiced on it all the time because he lived right kitty corner to where he lived. And that kid ended up being Michael Jordan. And so Michael Jordan first learned how to dunk on my dad's backboard and broke it. And what's interesting is in that documentary about him, they talk about how his dad built a basketball court in their backyard, but that is not true. He did not have a backboard back there, and his dad couldn't afford it. He had a bunch of kids he was taking care of by himself, basically. And so they all played in my dad's driveway when he lived there, and that's how we got to know him all. So we watched him when he went to UNC. And then my older sister, when we had moved back to Wilmington, she went to UNC and had a great athletic career there herself, actually. She had never done crew in her life and then ended up going on the third boat in the country and getting bronze nationals her first year doing crew. And then she goes, "Oh, this is too early in the morning." And then she decided, "Oh, I'll just play lacrosse," and then played varsity lacrosse. I mean, that's just who she was. So then after she left her last year, I started in 2003. And man, I'll tell you what, I love UNC. But yeah, it's been a great time. I've special my heart, my place my heart, especially for the 2005 national team. But I don't know if I've told you that story about when I originally got to meet all those guys.
No.
So I used to play all the time with this guy named Ethan, and he is just one of those people that can play anything: soccer, baseball, tennis, golf, doesn't matter. He's a good athlete. So we used to just pack up bags of basketball stuff and go play every sport known to man. But after my freshman year, I had broken up with a girlfriend and I needed to meet more friends because you know how it goes, you get too siloed your freshman year if you're not going out and meeting people. So I was like, I need to learn how to meet more people here. Everybody's already friended up. And so my sophomore year, I was like, I'm going to learn to play basketball. I never really played it. And so I started playing every single day. And there are these courts at UNC. There's four sets of two, and there's like a net in the middle. And the very back ones, it's Carmichael Gym, is what it's called. And it's the one they originally, the stadium behind it's now the women's stadium, but that's the original UNC men's basketball stadium. It's right behind there. And so I started on the very back, just terrible. And by the end of my sophomore year, getting into my junior year, I was getting really good. And I ended up playing on the second courts. Now, you had to be like basically on the varsity team to play in the first courts. They would sit open because people were like, it had a reference spot. It could be like 10 teams waiting, but they still wouldn't play on there. And so, anyway, I was playing against a guy and we were playing pickup, and he had been the North Carolina State dunk champion. And so he had won for the whole state while I was in college. And he was a PhD student. This guy was like 6'5, athletic, 225, just a beast. Anyway, we're playing and he goes up to dunk on me and I block the heck out of it, knock it all the way across the fence. However, he hits me so hard, I go flying like 20 feet. Because I was 6'1", maybe 195. This dude just pushed, I mean, blast me across the court. But I did block his dunk, which, it hurt afterwards. But he gave me, because he had played on the practice squad with the UNC varsity team prior, he let me have what they call the Carolina Blue shoes. So you're not allowed to get Carolina Blue basketball shoes unless somebody from varsity gives you permission. And it's kind of like a rite of passage. That once you get them, because people are serious about it. Once you have them on, I mean, you're picked for every pickup game going forward. And so that was like paradise. So I had started playing a lot more, and all of a sudden I bump into a guy and I turn around, and he's like 6'8". And I realize, this is post 2005 national championship, and I had already met a guy named Raymond Felton, who was the point guard, and I was pretty good buddies with him. And so I turn around, and that's Jawad Williams, who was on the national championship team. And the next thing I know, I'm bumping shoulders with Sean May, who I had known a little bit since my sophomore year. Little known fact, by the way, Sean May is super brilliant. I think he was like an economics major or something, or he was double majoring, had like a 3.85, always had two girlfriends. But anyway, he's a UNC assistant coach now. So all of a sudden, I'm playing pickup basketball. I must have played 25, 35 times with the national championship team and the squad. That's like Rashad McCants. And it was Raymond Felton, Jawad Williams, Sean May, Jackie Manuel, Melvin Scott. Scott was his last name. It was backup point guard. Anyway, a bunch of other really great players. And so we got to play all the time. And then me and another guy would go play on the practice squad for the women's basketball team.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, when you're playing pickup games with those guys, are they feeding you the rock, or You're trying to just
focus. You know, they're kind. Let's just put it that way. I'm not playing competitively with them. So I knew Rashad pretty well. Originally, he was introduced to me in there's this famous place at UNC called The Pit. And Raymond Felton, I don't know what he goes by now, but he introduced me to Rashad McCants. Rashad McCants did not like white people. And so he was kind of mean mugging. He wouldn't really talk to me that much. And then eventually, I used to go to this place where they had nickel shots on Tuesdays at like 5 p.m. when nobody was there. And him and I would meet there every Tuesday and do nickel shots. So we ended up getting along.
Yeah.
And I would either guard Rashad McCants, who was way bigger, way faster, and 1,000 times better than me. And the agreement was he wouldn't drive on me, but I couldn't guard him within 7 feet of the 3-point line. And he never missed. What do you do? But normally, the most competitive I could attempt to be, which he was still so much better than me, was the backup point guard. And him and I, he was about my size, height, still way faster and better than me, but we got to play a lot. It was really fun.
When you're setting those picks, tell me about some of the taking the charge or.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You don't want to try to block a guy like Sean May, you know, who's 6'9", 295 pounds or whatever he was. Because not only it's funny because you're used to when you play pickup basketball and you try to, let's say, play a staunch defense, which I was known for playing hardcore defense. When they kind of do that lean back push towards the rim, normally you kind of bounce off them and you come back in. But when they did it, I mean, it was like you went flying across. You must have moved like 6 feet. It was like somebody picked you up and placed you like 5 feet away from them. So there's not much you could do. Or they'll run through you, man. I'll tell you what, there's no mercy when it comes to it. So you gotta, you know, understand your elbows are going to hurt after a game. You'll take a couple busted knees, but it's worth it.
I had this kind of in my notes here, but I got to go ahead and ask now the composition of your closet, Denny. Tell me about the representation of UNC threads to just everyday wardrobe. How much Tar Heel blue is in, if I open that closet, it's a sea of blue.
It's a sea of either dark blue with light blue on it or light blue with probably black or dark blue on it. Yeah. And it's a problem we have. It's not just me, it's Tar Heel. So people always laugh. They're like, dude, you're wearing a Tar Heel shirt and a Tar Heel hat, and it's not even like basketball or football season. And I'll say, well, you know, that's what we do. Everybody does, though. Those Tar Heels are out of the way. Yes. So like my wife just bought me another shirt that just happened to be on sale from Nike, and it comes in. It's another UNC shirt. So I would say half of my T-shirts are probably UNC gear, and 70% of my winter clothes and hoodies and everything else are UNC. So it's, you know, outside of actual work shirts, which I still have some UNC polos, it's quite a bit of them.
How do you handle, I know this past season was tough. There was a tough ending, 2023 NCAA tournament. How do you do when, obviously there's the championships, but what's it like, if I'm hanging out with you, do I need to just say, hey, Denny, I'll see you tomorrow. It's been fun. And just leave. Or what's it like when the final buzzer hits and it has not ended well?
Oh, I'll tell you what, it's a lot of sadness, yeah. a lot of me cursing. So my cousins actually went to Alabama. And so I probably said some not so nice things to him and made a lot of jokes at Alabama's expense. my wife went upstairs and just left me, and it just kept telling me to keep it down. But it's a sad moment. It takes me some time to get over March Madness, because that's my favorite time of the year. But, you know, I'll do my best to stay positive. And if we win, I'm the best to be around, though. But it can hurt.
Then, of course, there's, you know, Tar Heel baseball. They were in the College World Series, eliminated by Florida State. But, I mean, a pretty competitive program there in baseball, women's basketball.
Every year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they make it to the College World Series every other year, if not almost every year. They have some of the best baseball coaches in the country. And if you ever hear, like, anybody on Sports Center or any of those talk about, they have some of the best coaching and recruiting people there is. So they produce – when I went to UNC – there were two that I think they were like 6'9 or 6'10, and they were twins, and both of them were pitchers, and both of them went in the first round to the MLB, which is crazy. You know, two twins that are that, like, basically Randy Johnson going to the MLB. But this year it was a guy named Travis Honeycutt who got drafted first round. He comes from near where I grew up, Wilmington. The Honeycutts are a huge set of cousins and families. And it's not surprising that the Honeycutt went to the MLB because everybody in their family and all for the last like 30 years around New Hanover County and surrounding counties, all of them are good at sports. They play sports until their 50s and they're always the captain of their teams and best. It doesn't matter. They're all just the men and women of those families are just talented.
Without going too much down a rabbit hole here, because I want to move on to some other things, but notable UNC baseball alumni, Daniel Baird, got to do a Dan Time mention there, but also, you know, guys like Chris Iannetta, Brian Roberts, Kyle Seager, BJ Surhoff, Walt Weiss.
Yeah, I mean, just tons of them. And it's almost unfortunate that they don't get as much love as they deserve because they get a little overshadowed by basketball. And now, you know, football is always so big. But I'll tell you what, there are some devoted fans that go to those games religiously every game, home game for decades. And so they do get a lot of love back at UNC.
So played basketball at the YMCA as a older dude. I was, you know, I ran my mouth a lot and had a lot of fun playing basketball. You can get a lot out of you. Basketball is, it's competition, but you really learn about other people and how they, you know, do they play defense or do they cheat or, you know, all those sort of things. You learn about people. So one of the guys at the YMCA, I played between 3 and 5 days a week for 20 years, maybe even more actually, but forever. And so one of the guys at the gym said, hey, there are these leagues in the city that are kind of open leagues in the spirit of you just play. So it's not an age group. It's not a certain level like an ABC player or anything like that. It's just open. So it means it's the best players in our community. And he said, why don't we put a team in the league? So we figured out how much it would cost, and it was about $500. So we said we get 10 people, that's $50 a piece. So we asked basically the 10 best guys in the gym basically to play, and candidly, about half of them didn't do it. So we picked up some other guys that did do it, and we lost that year in the City of Pensacola Championship game. We finished second in the league for the year, but we didn't win. It was close, too. The game came right down to the end, but we didn't win. And one of the guys that did play on our team was a guy who went to the University of Alabama, Birmingham, played basketball there on scholarship, and he worked with what then was Gulf Power. Now it's Florida Power & Light, but he was Gulf Power, and he was in charge of generation for all of Northwest Florida, generation of power. Yeah, so he had a big job on the top floor office corner suite. And I said to him, his name was Mike, I said, Mike, some of these guys couldn't afford it. And I said, why don't you and I just split it, and then we'll pick the people we want on our team. And he said, okay, that was easy. It was about a 5-minute conversation. So we did, and we picked the guys that we wanted. It said it doesn't cost anything to play. And basically they all played, especially in the first couple of years. They all played. So there were two seasons, a spring and a fall season. That spring season we had lost in the finals. So we entered the fall season with basically the guys out of our gym that we wanted, and we ran through the league. We won the first of our, what I like to call, city championships that year, and we won five more straight. Spring, fall, five more straight. And after every championship game, we would go out for chicken wings and beer, and Mike and I would pay for that too. And the guys all loved it, and we got to always talking, and maybe the beer helped everybody talk a little easier, whatever. But we got to be friends because it wasn't really fights, but basketball games, you have to work like a team. And so we learned to kind of depend on each other, and we learned to work together to win. I was kind of the coach all that time. I only went in when we were up 20 or down 20, and we were never down 20. So I always went in when we were winning big, basically. And then everybody else was tired, and they'd pass it to me all the time. And so it was great for me. I loved it. I felt like I was a star. But all of those guys basically had been celebrities in high school, all everything basketball players in Pensacola as they went through, celebrities in their school, best player in their school. And they were celebrities, and they all got college scholarships, and virtually all of them blew it. They lost their scholarships, whatever. And they came back home, no degree, and really no training and really nowhere to go except back to basketball. And I realized after about the third celebration dinner, it dawned on me that the common denominator of all those guys was that they basically didn't have a strong role model, a strong male role model. And I said, well, you know, here we go again, right? Here's Danny. I said, I can help some of that. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be their father, but I'm happy to be, try to help them live better. So I started making those chicken wing and beer dinners once a month. And I brought in people to speak to them, to sit at the table and drink beer with them. And I brought in like a urologist, and I brought in a banker who taught them how to open bank accounts. And I brought in a car dealer who told them how to buy cars right, because they were going to these buy here, pay here lots that were super expensive. It was a waste. And I brought in a therapist, I mean, you know, but I brought in all sorts of things to teach these guys. And slowly, maybe looking back on it, wasn't so slow, but it felt slow. I got about two of them on with the city. I got, I think, three on with Gulf Power. I got two on with the local utility authority. So these were good paying jobs with retirement, with health care, all those sort of things, and was able to really, really help all those guys. Eventually, they made it on their own. And, you know, an old white guy was not the guy they wanted to hang out with on Friday night. And but I get it. And I love those guys. And they, and you know what, Dan, they love me. If I see them, they still come to my office.
Oh, I know they do. And I know they love you.
Yeah. And they come to my office just to say hello and check in. And but really what I think they're doing is telling me they're okay, which is better, right?
Because they never had a male figure, you know, in their life to say, hey, Uncle Joe, I'm doing pretty good. Hey, you'll never believe what I did. You know, they didn't have anybody to tell good news.
I guess it makes them feel good, and it makes me feel good to do it too. But what's really interesting in all those years of those guys, it was probably it was a great sort of run, about 5 or 6 years of being around those guys a lot. One time, one guy ever asked me to borrow money, and he paid me back. I've been asked to borrow money by a lot of people and a lot who have not paid me back. But I'm okay. I mean, it is what it is. But to me, that's kind of a point that they would rather keep my respect.
Sure.
And they'd rather find a way. I mean, I instilled a little bit in them to work your way out of a problem, not borrow your way out of a problem.
Right. You know, you've illustrated something that I don't think it's talked about a whole lot, where a young man, 18, 19 years old, blows a scholarship, and it's really just screwed up one time in a big way, and he just thinks, well, that's it. Oh, I'm just no good. And then just kind of trails off. Well, or he's got the skill set that he's not using, and he could be building a network, but he's not, because he doesn't have anybody believing in him.
Well,
what a difference. I thought it was all about just shooting hoops.
Well, when you're, it's a little bit societal. When you're in high school and you're the big man on campus, it's hard to go to the next step and not be the big man on campus, to be being told what to do when you don't really want to do it. You know, when you're the all-star on a high school team, you probably don't run the bleachers when everybody else does. And you probably can be a little late to practice and that sort of thing. But you're the star of that high school basketball team. But when you get to the first step of college, you know, it's a little different. I had one guy on our team. It's a crazy story. He is the greatest guy deep down. Now, everybody's got their own life, and he's a little interesting, but he grew up in Chicago, and he was an all-star basketball player in Chicago in high school, and at the arch enemy high school across town in Chicago. Now, this is not Pensacola. In Chicago, the arch enemy school across town was where Dwayne Wade played, and so our guy here, BG, was on our team, on his team, and Dwayne Wade was on their team. And they played each other, and BG just showed Dwayne Wade up. I mean, it was crazy. But towards the end of BG's senior year, he broke his ankle playing basketball, and he quit. He quit school. He quit everything. He never graduated. Dwayne Wade, of course, went on to Marquette and Pro Fame. BG, you know, just was lost when he lost the thing he had, and he never recovered, really. Now, he did recover, and he's a manager now at a big retail business. He's doing very well. But he was a part of this journey to help him realize how good he was at life. And he was easily the best basketball player around, not in a great way, not in a one-on-one kind of way, but what it takes to win as a team, he had it. I'll never forget, Dan, that guy played against me in the gym for 5 years maybe, and he killed me. I never could score on him. Now, he was a great player and I wasn't, but he didn't look like he was working very hard, and he would block my shot all the time. God, dog. And so we got on this team, and I got to be the coach, and I got to be the guy that was kind of watching out everybody. And we go to the gym. This is after about a season and a half of playing the league. And BG goes, "Dan, I got to tell you." I said, "What?" He said, "You know that before you shoot, you spin the ball in your hand." And I said, "No, what are you talking about?" He goes, "Yeah. Well, every time when you are going to shoot, you spin the ball in your hand and line the laces up." And I thought, I'll be a son of a gun. I never thought about that in all my life. But the whole time guarding me, if I didn't spin that ball, he knew I wasn't going to shoot. But the minute I spun it, he got in my face and blocked my shot all the time. He had such a mind for basketball. It is. He still does. It's amazing. And I told him that. And I got him to coach a little league team. They were great. He made all those kids into something. He still got some of those fathers who talk about him. I mean, you know, it's just the kind of stuff. But basketball, you learn a lot about people. We've had a lot of stories around here, Dan.
Danny, it's just listening to these stories, I have at the top of my notes, and I don't remember if I said this earlier in our conversation, wants others to thrive and succeed. Now, that's before we sat down in this room. And that's really been the hallmark of your career, from my perspective. Everything you do is about community and about building others up. There's a lot of talent here. There's a lot of talent on the sidelines. I've just blown away.
I knew you
played basketball at the Y. I didn't know anything else about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just picturing Danny running down the court.
Oh, yeah.
Pulling up for three.
Oh, yeah. And that's exactly what I did. And, you know, they went in pretty much more than they didn't. You know, I was a good shot because my theory of getting open is if you stand still long enough, the guy guarding you will leave. You know, but, you know, I got into it. It kept me in good shape, and it kept me healthy to be a parent, and it kept me healthy, and it would clear your mind. You can't be thinking about other things when you're playing basketball.